trumpeter Joe Newman and a bunch of really great sidemen opening a tune fit for today, Wednesday's Blues. Frank Foster on tenor sax, Tommy Flanagan on piano, Eddie Jones on bass, and Bill English on drums. It's from Newman's 1961 album, Good and Groovy. They don't make them like this anymore. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's the day after several special elections held across the country in which the Democrats rallied, even though, of course, it was about the duopoly winning once again. But the Democrats did perform quite nicely, taking quite a few seats all across the country, and in some cases even making history. Candidates squared off yesterday in special off-year elections across the country to fill congressional, state, and municipal seats that were up for grabs, and President Donald Trump's toxic leadership boosted strong turnouts and decisive victories for Democrats. Is this a harbinger of the duopoly's dogfight in 2018's midterm elections? We'll have to wait and see. Democrats are naturally euphoric about capturing governorships in Virginia, New Jersey, and a slew of seats in state houses. But these wins, we don't know whether they have anything, they have more to do, I should say, with voters' anti-Trump sentiment than the ability of the battered Democratic Party to funnel direct support for many of these candidates. So we'll be taking a look at that today. We're going to discuss elections, this particular set of elections all over the place, and what they yielded and what it holds for the future of politics by the duopoly, as far as we are concerned. But one incredible victory, and it's something to note, a first, a very, very first, Danica Rehm of Virginia is now the first openly transgender person elected to the state house, any state house in the United States. That's a great victory for the former journalist. She might want to write a story about that. But that was great. And we have, of course, a changing of the guard in Virginia. We have a new governor there, the lieutenant governor, Ralph Northam, actually won the governorship. So he's now Governor Northam. And the Democrat, Justin Fairfax, won the lieutenant governor's office in Virginia as well. He's only the second African-American to win a statewide post in Virginia. In New Jersey, we had former Goldman Sachs executive Phil Murphy winning, of course, to replace the most unpopular Governor Chris Christie. We have Democrats taking 14 seats in Virginia's House of Delegates. Another three are likely to be added to that count because they are now in the stage of a recount for those three seats. And they picked up at least two seats in Jersey's state Senate. And we have several more counts to come in because several states are still counting the ballots. Georgia had two interesting wins for the Atlanta State State House. St. Petersburg, a Democrat, Mayor Rick Kreisman, won re-election. That's probably because Joe Biden showed up and campaigned with him. So that might have helped him a great deal. In Manchester, New Hampshire, we have the first woman to win the mayor's office there. We have a bunch of other wins. It's going to take too long for me to go through that. But I think if you check online, you would get the results as they are. But these are the more significant wins. But it suffice it to say that the Democrats performed well. They got tremendous boosts from Donald Trump. Although it was expected that, you know, they would get some kind of support out there, even though the Democratic Party is in such bad shape in the sense that it doesn't have a war chest to support the candidates on the lower end of the ticket. It appeared that these candidates did a good job on their own to drum up support, and many of them won re-election because they did have close ties to the community. So that helped a lot. But overall, the most important factor here, and we can't escape it, is Donald Trump. He's in trouble now with the Republicans because his brand didn't do very much for them in these critical races. And now positions the party, the Republican Party, as having to climb a steep hill come 2020. And they're not going to be grateful for that. Because Donald Trump's toxic, chaotic, offensive in many ways personality turned people off a lot, a lot. And so it kind of gave an unintended benefit. He gave the Democrats an unintended benefit of victory. So that was good. Also, we have to take a look at the fact that in this political season, these are off-year elections. They're called special elections, and they are held to fill seats that went vacant because, as you know, with this new administration, people quit their jobs and went into the administration or resigned or aged out. Whatever the reason, there are many seats that became available, and this is how they are filled by these special elections held all over the country. Typically, special elections don't draw too much, you know, intense attention. But this was an exception. Evidently, it was an exception, because it was the first test of Donald Trump's staying power, his appeal, his cachet. And it shows that the people are turned off by this president. He will have to deal with it with his party. The Republicans will have to deal with him, because being so close to 2020, and seeing a rally like this by the Democrats, who were all but written off, I myself was among those thinking, there's no hope for the Democrats. But they pulled it together, and I think the sentiment of the people was so strong that they decided to, you know, make their feelings known via a vote. And we don't know whether this is because the candidates were worth it, whether they are, but they certainly are preferable to having a Trumpite. As they figure it out, it's much better to have a different candidate, and they're not going to abide a Republican, not at this time. So it was a smackdown for Donald Trump. Now the Democratic Party has some homework to do, and as it always had. But now, you know, we've entered this phase where the party is so fractious. The leadership is so scattered. And in recent weeks in particular, or I should say since the publication of What Happened by the ghostwriter for Hillary Clinton, things have become very, very dramatic within the Democratic Party in terms of its leadership. We have the big party leaders kind of receding for a while there, kind of absent from the fray. When things were very rough, they were, how should I say, they were remote. They were remote. But I think it has come to them. They have finally begun to recognize how deep this goes. And it does go deep. People are turned off by the Democratic Party at this time more than they have in recent years or decades even. They can't stand the party. The party is now associated with corruption and weakness, the inability to really govern themselves. They have not really stood up for issues that the people wanted them to stand up for. And they've been pretty casual about this business of confronting Trump and winning significant victories. More so, they have not, I don't think it appears that they do not have a strict agenda that they're following. We hear from time to time from Nancy Pelosi, who's having difficulty remembering things, what they ought to do. And she was very, very apt about it in recent weeks that the Democrats should not engage in criticism of the Trump administration. Instead, they should espouse the programs of the Democratic Party, this collection of planks that are called a better deal. Except that at one news conference, even Nancy Pelosi couldn't recall what a better deal is all about. She couldn't recall it. So it was, I think, more so the feelings of the people who decided that they needed to make their points their way in rejecting Trump, particularly rejecting Trump. I don't know whether it is that they voted for something, but they certainly did vote against something, and that something was Donald Trump. That's good. Good news that at least we're seeing some smattering, some hint that the Democratic Party is realizing that it is in bad shape and it really needs to get its act together and get it together fast. Because I think also people are also beginning to realize the power they have to change the course of things. And in a sense, this enables them to be a bit more independent as voters in their decision making. In other words, if they could make you, they're getting the sense that they could make you and they can break you. And there are hints of that occurring with this vote. As I said, I don't know. And, you know, polls would show it sometime down the road whether this vote or the votes cast, a decidedly Democratic vote across the country in these special elections, were for something, but Was that as a result of their own enlightenment, their own particular choice, or were they so against Donald Trump? Were they so turned off by this administration that they just said anything else will do? So we don't know. But of course, the bottom line is, this still turned out to be what it has been for all these years, a contest between the members of the duopoly, the Democrats fighting the Republicans for power and control at the federal, state, and municipal levels. It still is a duopoly, no matter how you see the outcome of the election. The bottom line is we see no participation. We see no candidates running outside of the duopoly. And that continues to be very, very disappointing. And particularly so that in these special elections, and certainly in 2020, you have a gift. Trump is a gift to third-party politics. The Republicans, as I said, well, we know they are Republicans, and all they're concerned about is getting bigger budgets for the military. They want to cut and you know, the scorched earth approach to legislating. And under this president, it's also in your face that he so despises people. I mean, he actually despises them. He's not even kind enough to not let it be known. He openly despises large swaths of Americans. You couldn't ask for a better time to really be out there and organizing and inserting yourself into the political fray. It bothers me, and I don't know why we have become so accustomed to it that we just don't even think about it anymore. We have two wretched parties, and yesterday they divvied up the spoils again, and if it didn't go to one party, it went to another. It went to the other one. When in many cases, neither party is a good choice. Neither party is a good choice. So what is it that we have? Why are we so absent from important things as politically organized people? People making political choices. The people who made choices yesterday essentially were people, I would imagine, who were predisposed to those choices. I don't know that we had a substantial representation of people who were independent-minded and decided, well, there's no independent running, so I will vote Democrat simply as a strategy to poke the Republicans in the eye. But we have to come to this question. Why is there no independent party in the fray in special elections? Well, this is what I am hoping you can share, what your thoughts are. mean, is this too much of an expectation, or is there some other reason, a legitimate reason, that we have such an erratic schedule of competition for public office by independent or third-party movements, giving people really still no choice? There are municipal offices up for grabs in special elections, state offices that could be contested for, governorships, lieutenant governorships. This is not a presidential campaign. These are for offices that I think, when you look at it, I think third parties should have a good shot at winning something. This first by Danica Rem of Virginia, she was a journalist, and knocked and knocked and knocked on thousands and thousands of doors. She insisted that she would belong in political life to make a difference. And so she made it happen. She made it happen. So it's not impossible for a movement to make that kind of thing happen. And I see all the time just missed opportunities, and I wonder why. Surely you could have won a couple of seats, a couple of offices, but we're not prepared. We are not prepared for the fight. We might want to put up a fight every 4 years via a candidate who for three of the 4 years is not visible. And the organizations that could launch a successful candidate seem disinterested. I don't know what the reason is that in 2017, we still are dealing with the duopoly. Even after a presidential race, a contentious presidential race in which somebody might have gotten a little bit of play on the national scene, and that could have been built upon to see whether at the state and local levels there is some kind of hope. I just don't understand it. So I'm depending on you today to educate us. What do you think is a problem here? Why do we have this continuing drought of candidates? I mean, Bernie Sanders at the national level looked promising, and poof, we don't hear about Bernie. We don't hear from Bernie, nor we don't hear of anyone, let's just say, approved with the Bernie Sanders, you know, housekeeping seal of approval, who can at least begin to get people used to the idea that politics in the United States shouldn't just be about Democrats and Republicans. I mean, come on. Is that all we have? Is that all we are expecting to have? Just Democrats and Republicans. You know, this is why a long time ago I stopped my involvement in political elections. It's just, I just don't get it. This country has to have more than just that to offer to people who desperately need an alternative. They need something else. Look at the conditions we're in. Look at the things that we have to deal with every single day. And so often, the Democrats and the Republicans are indistinguishable from each other. And just when we so sorely need a breath of fresh air, it doesn't even have to be an actual election of somebody, but some political entity that shows promise of making good on that very soon. I don't want to even contemplate another decade or two or three or four, whatever it is, of life stuck in this political bifurcation where you either are a Democrat or you're a Republican, and if you're neither of those things, you don't matter anyway. I'll take this break and come back to your thoughts on why we're stuck here. And also, what do you think this vote, this seemingly extra boost that the Democratic Party has gotten, what do you think accounts for it? We'll talk about these things when we come back from the break. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about yesterday's special elections in which the Democrats got one heck of a boost, and it seemed to have been a referendum on Donald Trump's toxic administration. Mahat, you're on the air from New York.
Yeah. Is that me?
Yes, it is you.
Okay, I'm trying to do a couple things. First of all, I appreciate your beautiful assessment of this duopoly crisis. And crisis is not the word, but it's a big, big, big problem. And so in a certain sense, we really don't need to be stunned so much by this incompetent, clinically idiotic president. What the problem seems to be is corporatism is the correct word for that, which you don't hear much talk about. But it's also a way to describe fascism, and that's exactly what it is. So it's very troubling. But I also appreciate the way that you describe the fact that people are waking up you know, Mr. Trump puts everyone on the brink of a nuclear war, you know, and continuing. So I'd like to hear some discussion about the Russian threat of all of this too, because I've been following that. And that is very, very interesting, and particularly since Trump admires Putin so much. I mean, there's so many connections. I mean, during the campaign, what recently came out, was that he was actually trying to build a Trump Tower. So basically, Donald Trump is essentially a grifter. A grifter is the correct word. So this is where we are in 2017, significantly into the 21st century, and everything about him is as a grifter. I mean, he just recently applied for 70 visas for foreign workers. I got to go to my bell, but I'll continue to listen over the air. Thank you so much. Love you, sister.
Thank you. 888-874-4888. What I'm talking about is that we should expect by now a very healthy choice among political parties. The Libertarian Party, the Conservative Party, the Green Party. We should have the Socialist Party, the Democratic Socialist Party, whatever. We should have a whole group of parties looking to capture our support. But we continue with this thing. It's the Democrats or the Republicans. And in many ways, they're both odious. They're both completely out of touch with where people want to go or the ways people are thinking and what they want to happen in the country, and they don't have a vehicle for that to happen. So how is it that we end up in 2017 as a world-leading nation, and we still don't have more of a choice than, you know, Republicans and Democrats? I find this so absurd. And I find it a danger, actually, to democracy itself. We do not have a broad range of interests that could be accommodated by a political vehicle. It is very, very sad. What are you thinking? 888-874-4888. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice, and good afternoon to your audience.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Thank you. I was calling because I, you know, in light of yesterday's general election, you know, in Michigan, and particularly in Detroit, I witnessed some stuff that I had not seen before, and I'm going to try to keep it in the context of the framework you laid out about having limited choices of parties. Was that the question or part of the question?
Yes. Forgive. Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Well, you know what? I think some of the reasons that we have this situation, I think, based on what I witnessed last night, it's because many of us people don't realize our own power, and we've been kept ignorant or trained to look elsewhere for power. I say that because last night in Detroit, I'll be brief, at the Cobo Center, during the absentee voter counting work that was taking place, I was there as an election challenger. And there came a point where it was late in the evening, after 10, whatever. The workers had been there since I don't know how long, earlier in the day. And a lot of them were tired. Now, it was a good 200 people in there, maybe more, okay? Now, they had been, quote-unquote, trained or told that the exit procedure was one where a counting board table was called, and people would get up individually. You would leave table by table after all the work is done, okay? That didn't happen. What happened was people got tired, and they left those counting boards and went toward the exit before they were, quote-unquote, supposed to do. And the thing that struck me was how the authorities changed their minds, because the people had changed their minds. They were done sitting there. And they went, like I said, toward the door. Now, unfortunately, some of them left with, in some cases, the work was not fully complete. But they were tired. And I'm just saying that as an example of these people made up their own minds what they were going to do. Yeah, they had gone through the training, what have you, and had been told this, that, and the other. But when the rubber hit the road, they headed for the door, and the powers that be could not stop them.
Wow. So how do you think this might have affected the bottom line outcome in terms of tallying the votes and so forth?
I don't know. My counts seem to all square. I don't know. There was perhaps a backup plan. Some of the data was not transmitted to the county. It was transmitted to the city for counts, but it had not been transmitted to the county. And I inquired about that. There was a lady there from the state. I asked her, well, what's the deal with that? And she explained to me that because of the number of precincts, trying to transmit that data at the county at the same time, the server couldn't handle it all. It didn't take all of it. So they had to go back and resubmit some of that data.
This is 2017, and this is a pretty important election in a major country. And what you're telling us is, well, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, you had to go one by one by one by hand. You know, this couldn't be right. You know what I mean? Given how many elections we've had, how many problems we've had with elections, how many promises to improve the integrity of the vote, this is what you're telling us. This is what happened.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. It was something to see. And not only that, I kind of noticed that, you know, many of the election workers, you know, they were the majority of them were, I'd say, maybe 60 plus, and it seemed like a few of them were, a lot of them were related to each other, you know, moms and husbands and cousins I'm not even sure why I brought that up, except to say that, you know, I maybe counting that stuff wasn't everybody's top priority. Maybe some of the priority was trying to get a little bit of extra money in the budget, you know, for that month, what have you. And they figured, I guess, 12, 16 hours was enough time.
Well, that I am hoping that that was isolated. I'm hoping it wasn't duplicated elsewhere throughout Detroit. But thanks for bringing that to our attention. Thanks, Leona, for your call today. Sharon from New York, you're on the air.
Thank you so much, Utrice, for taking my call. Well, I don't look at it like what that woman said. But I do think that we need to get another party, as you asked us. I think we need to train this generation how to debate, how to stick to the the any type of subject or stick to the job. They need to read and they participate. They need to be taught either at their home or by the schools, the Constitution, their rights, their responsibilities. Then we could eventually get another party. I'm with you. Hopefully we could, just because this is America. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't have another party along with the other two. But these people, they have to be trained and they have to be encouraged and stood with. You can't just shunt a child in the 8th, 9th, 10th grade and never call on them and expect them to be a leader. They are not going to be a leader. Because you never have given them the opportunity.
We do have established parties. How come they weren't there in the mix? Is it that they're not at all interested in vying for public office, or is it that they just see no point to it? You have you have so many parties in existence that should be at the very least interested,
but they're not
in appealing to voters.
Yeah, they should.
What do you
but
think?
They gotta be taught.
All these different parties that exist.
You've got to teach them up front, Utrees, and if they've never, I'm a former teacher. So I know that if you don't teach them up front, then they won't know it. They don't pull it by osmosis. We used to have pretend voting in our classrooms, but now we don't have that even. So they don't even know what to do.
Do you feel good about this business of just having two parties?
I would like to see three. You ask me, do I feel good about it? Come see, come saw. I would like to have three.
So why didn't we have three yesterday?
It never crossed anybody's mind to have three, I don't think. Yesterday, I don't know, but you still got to teach them young. They've got to be, by the time they get 18, they should have had experience. They don't have that. They should have confidence, self-love, and get out there and work. You don't be walking off the job in the middle of the procedure. You know what I mean.
Oh, are you talking about the example that Leona presented today? I was talking about the party leaderships themselves. You know, the parties making it imperative that in these contests all across the country, there's no representation from the Libertarian Party or the Conservative Party or the Working Families Party, and the things that you would expect a vibrant democracy to reflect. You have
exactly.
a range of choice, but that's not what happened. So
no.
I'm hoping that that's one of the things that we can begin to impress upon political leaders out there to really think about this. People are being denied a choice. A valid choice.
May I say thank you to you also, because you do such a wonderful job in explaining the procedure and the legal system and what we need to do to make America great. And I say thank you to you for that.
Thank you very much, Sharon. Thank you so much.
Goodbye.
David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Trace.
Yes, sir.
Nice to talk with you. This topic seems very interesting to me, but I have a different perspective. First of all, I don't think this is a democracy. I see it as a faux democracy and or a quasi-democracy where you have some of the instruments that people might use in a democracy. But I think the big problem is this. People have been well trained by the ruling class that runs things in this country. The ruling class, at small percentages of the South, have trained the people all along with the idea that having this Republican and Democrat party system is the normal, rational thing to do. no one has any idea that these people represent the same interests, the two of those capitalist parties, and they go through this boxing match every couple years or every few years to see which division controls the empire. So that is the real problem. The problem is that you talk to so many people and they have no idea in their head that you could vote for anything other than Republican or Democrat. That's it. And people who should know, but if you've been trained from early on to exist in a system that is a phony system like this, then you go along with the program. Well, you know, I mean, how can you say you have a democracy and have capitalism? Capitalism is about making profit for the capitalists. And if you had a real democracy, you wouldn't decide to make yourself poor. And look at all the poor people walking around here. I see them lining up all the time for soup kitchens or food pantries and whatnot. So the point is, they have the ruling class, the people at the top, have done such a tremendous job in fooling or playing the people. That is what's going on. They play the folks. Why should these poor folks be voting for the Democrats or Republicans? But they do. And they're so well-trained that they go along with this idea. These other parties we have that you mentioned, most of them, they let them exist to some extent as sort of window dressing, some idea that, oh, well, we'll make it seem like this is democracy. We have these other fringe parties like, you know, the Green and Libertarian and Conservative and whatnot. And, oh, yeah, we got all these parties. But the point is, people think in this way that they only got one choice, that's Republican or Democrat for election. That's the way the people are trained. And they're trained as that way, and they're not going to do anything different in school to train the children against their own interests. And who runs the schools? The rulers, they run the schools. And they're not going to train the people to sabotage their rule and the fascism that they have on steroids at this time in American history.
But
at one time,
you
did have other parties. You had socialists, communists, all these other parties. So they got rid of those after the Second World War. But, you know, the people don't get it.
But I also must ask you, what proportion of blame, for lack of a better term, do you assign to these parties that could be available, but apparently for one reason or the other, they just aren't?
Well, I guess there's blame to go all around. Some of them are not that aggressive as they should be to bring attention to themselves. And the other part of this is, don't forget, the ruling class controls the media. They control all aspects of the media, you know, maybe 99%. And they help in the training of people to go along with the duopoly that we have in effect. You know, I've spoken to people lately before the last presidential election, and they think it's impossible to vote for anything other than Democrat or Republican. You know, people are so fantastically trained. I mean, the ruling class has done a brilliant job of controlling the people, and the people don't get it. The people don't get it, and that's regardless of their phenotype or whatever. They don't understand the system. So we got to do a good system analysis, get the people, get their attention to that system analysis, and explain to them that this is not working because that's the way the ruling class wants it. They want it just Republican and Democrat.
Exactly. Thank you, David, for your very considered opinion. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. I hope you're feeling well today.
I'm hanging in. How about you?
I'm doing pretty decent, catching up on a few odd jobs here and there out there that I've wanted to get to for the last 3 years and finally catching up with a few things. But besides that, everything else sucks.
So what about your thoughts about these special elections? And here we are in 2017 still having the old duopoly.
Yeah, I think, when the primary started, I called and I said, I think it's a one-party system. You asked me why I thought that, because I think it's all rigged. And it's better to have just two parties when you want to rig stuff. Because then you could say, well, half voted for this one, half voted for that one. I think that with the Liberal Party, they morphed into the Democratic Party, and the Conservatives morphed into the Republican Party, and we're supposed to take that as a given, and that's why they don't really exist, because they would just work against each other if there was those extra two parties in there. And the Green Party missed their golden opportunity, and I think the system that wants to have this duopoly, this phony duopoly, which is really a one-party system like a dictatorship or a communist thing, they were afraid that running Hillary and Trump, the Green Party might be able to capture 5% and then become a legitimate party in the next election, 2020. I think Jill Stein was stubborn. She should have stepped aside and let Jamal Baraka run and piggyback off the fact that Barack Obama won the last two elections, a black man, and piggyback off that and run a black man in the Green Party. Let him campaign in all the neighborhoods to try to get at least 5%. And that would have proved my point if they didn't, because 96% of black voters came out for Barack Obama. I would think they would come out for another black candidate, even if it was the Green Party. And if it didn't happen, then you would have to wonder why. And that was a shame that they didn't do that. Why do you believe that they allow us to vote for the highest position in government if they don't let us vote for the second highest position, which is Secretary of State? If we had the right to vote for that, I don't think Hillary would have been Secretary of State. We would have said, no way, Jose, and we would have dumped her out of there. But they don't let us vote if we want fluoride in the water. They don't let us vote if we wanted asbestos in every nook and cranny of every town and city in the United States. And then they found out that it's the highly hazardous material in 1968. They don't let us vote on any important issues. Fluoride's used in rat poison, and that's in our water. Do we get to decide that? Do we get to decide if we want mercury put in all our mouths and all our children's mouths and all our parents' mouths? Do we get to decide on that? So why would they let us vote for the presidency of the United States, which is the highest office in government?
How about answering your own question? What do you think is the answer?
The answer is everything's rigged, and this is the way they want it. And as long as they have two parties, they feel we're satisfied with that. As long as we have a choice of A and B, that's good. And this way they can keep it all nice and neat and easy. And that's why I don't think it's hard to do a recount nowadays in this great world of technology. Computers are counting everything up. If Jill Stein asked for a recount, it should have been easy to give it. But she caught them with their pants down, not expecting a person, a party that only got 1% asking for a recount. So they were, they didn't know what to do. So they had to make up excuses why they couldn't do a recount, because they knew Hillary wasn't going to ask for one, because she was meant to lose this whole time. They wanted Trump to win, and the only person Trump could possibly beat would be Hillary, and that's why they had the election set up this way. Hillary did all she could to lose. She didn't campaign in any of the states. She just sticked with the big states that she already had in her pocket, and she went up to Harlem and insulted her base of black voters that usually would have voted for a Democratic Party. She went up and insulted them and their children and everybody else in the world by saying that her grandchildren are privileged over everybody else's, over all you poor people. This is what I'm seeing. This is what is a disgrace. And if I have any more time, I have one question I wanted to ask about Charles O'Dell's remarks.
But you don't have any more time. We're running out of time, as a matter of fact, on the program today.
Why did Charles O'Dell said that he was mad at Sharpton for what he did to Stephen Pagonis? I don't understand that one. Do you know what he was meaning by that?
That's a whole different discussion. So let's stay with what we're talking about. I'll get to that.
Let's revisit Tawana Brawley, because I got a lot to say about it.
All right. Well, when we get to the subject, I certainly expect you to call in. Thank you very much.
But
you know, this brings us to the end of our program today. We've run out of time. And I would like you to continue thinking about this. Why do we continue up now? I mean, 2017, and in these very important contests that in many ways would determine public policy at the federal, state, and municipal, local levels, we still have nothing more than just two choices. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Ring of Fire Radio, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.